everyone knows this guy, right? That's why I always put his picture there, because around the world they know this guy. Dr. Ben Carson? Oh, man. Head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins at 32 years of age. The guy's, and at the fifth grade, he was voted the dumbest boy in the world by his class. This is a story and a half. This guy's amazing. There's another guy I could put up there. None of you would know him, but he was the head of pediatrics at Johns Hopkins. His name was Frank Oski. He wrote a book. Now, this guy was head of pediatrics. What's a pediatrician? Take care of young children, babies. His book was Don't Drink Your Milk. Interesting. Milk is the biggest falsity been foisted upon us in a long time. Anyway, Johns Hopkins came out with a list of things that feed cancer a few years ago. The first one is amazing. It is attitude. Cancer is a disease of the body, the mind, and the spirit. Matter of fact, the sermon title this morning is, As a Man Thinketh in His Heart, So Is He. And we talked about this last week. You can sit there and you can think yourself, you can talk yourself, you can make yourself sick. Matter of fact, during the Korean War, there is a new illness that was identified amongst American or Allied prisoners of war of the communist Chinese. It was called give-up-itis. They would have, what the communist Chinese would do is they'd single out one prisoner and give him special favors. What do you think the other prisoners thought about that guy? That guy's ratting. That guy's, and so they shunned him. Well, the guy didn't like the enemy. His friends didn't like him. He was completely isolated. So what he would do is he'd go into his hooch, lay down in bed, pull the covers over his head, and die. He just gave up. It was all in his mind. But another interesting thing that came out of the Korean War, out of the prisoners of war camp, was a young man then, he recently, I think just a few years ago, received the Medal of Honor for what he did in the POW camps back during the Korean War. Now, normally you can't do it that far gone, but the problem was he had been a young man growing up, I think it was in Hungary in World War II. He was taken prisoner, sent to a concentration camp, and he learned how to survive. And when he was liberated by the Americans, he was so appreciative, he says, I'm going to go to America and pay him back one of these days. Well, he ended up in America. When the Korean War broke out, he immediately enlisted in the army, got sent to Korea, and now he was a POW again. But he had learned to survive. In the POW camp, there were plenty of sick people. There was one guy that was on the point of death. And he says, I've got to save this guy. So he went out and he found some tablets, some round tablets. He flattened them out to make them look like a little brown, round tablet. They were goat droppings, is what they were. And he'd go back and he'd tell this man, he says, look, I've made a deal with one of the guards, and he's given me some medication. It will help you. And so every day, he fed this man goat droppings. And he got completely well. What would you call that?
Placebo.
Exactly, it was placebo. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And Johns Hopkins is telling us our attitude can have everything to do with our health, especially in the battle with fighting cancer. Interesting things that they say. Happiness may be a bigger factor in determining health than not smoking. Isn't that interesting? Here's another way of putting it. A happy smoker has about the same risks as an unhappy health nut. Huh? So as I used to tell him when I stood in front of the people there in Ukraine and Russia, olabites, smile, because what our attitude, our not smiling, is going to hurt your health. So it's a good idea to be a happy health nut, right? Let's be happy health nuts. another thing that feeds cancer is sugar. Big cancer feeder. I've already told you about that lady. Especially the our favorite confection here. Now, I was with Lloyd on Thursday, went down to where Lloyd works, down there in the windy side, really windy side, windy and hot side. And he says that, well, someone told them here in this church that Carob has caffeine in it too. So they said, well, I might as well eat chocolate. Well, folks, that's not the way it is. There is no caffeine in Carob. There is some theobromine, but there's a very small amount. In no caffeine in Carob, 3 milligrams of theobromine in coffee, 100 grams of chocolate, 180 milligrams of caffeine, and 2,320 milligrams of theobromine. Makes basically chocolate, another thing in the same family is cheese and wine, major implicators in migraine headaches. It's not good food, folks. No. You may think it's good. It's not healthy food. There you go. It is good food for some of you, but it is not healthy food. Anything in that family, coffee, tea, cola, and chocolate, feeds cancer. It causes mutations, does strange things. Another thing that causes feeds cancer is milk, because milk produces mucus in the body, and cancer feeds on mucus. Yummy. There goes Flojo. Another one is sodium, which we're going to find in our salt. They've done a study in Japan. They link the intake of sodium with the high instance of stomach cancers. Now you say, well, maybe I should stop using the salt shaker. We only get about 25% of our salt from our salt shakers. Now back home, I don't even own a salt shaker. After that little experience with the Koreans, I just don't do salt very much. I do put some on my avocados. It seems like they really get enhanced by it. But 75% of our sodium is going to come from boxed and bagged and canned foods. So if your sodium is high, I suggest you start eating a little bit lower on the hog. Start eating things that are complex, things that you've got to peel rather than open. You understand what I'm talking about here. Does anyone know where that term eating high in the hog come from? This is sort of an aside, but it's an interesting little point. Back during slavery, when it was time for butchering the hogs, the slaves would have to butcher the hogs for the masters, and the masters got the roasts and the whatever, I don't know how to name a pig, but the slaves got what was left, the tails, the pigs, the feet, the entrails. So the masters ate high on the hog, they ate low on the hog. And it's interesting, they still do. Chitlins, I don't know about here in Hawaii, but I live in the South, and these are very popular foods. In the South, pig's feet and pickled pig's ears and tails and entrails and all these things. Yuck. Anyway, Americans eat a large amount of sodium, about 2 teaspoons of sodium a day, which is far more than we need. Let's get down to this. Baked goods, very high in sodium. I'm talking about people who are having some sodium problems. Here's some of the things you need to be looking at. You got osteoporosis, got to get rid of your sodium, baked goods. Anything that's dairy is going to have high levels of sodium. And anything in a can. Let's talk about the dairy products. When I was a child, we had a farm. We raised a couple of cattle every year for meat. We weren't vegetarians. And there was a field that we raised them in, that in the corner of the field, there was a big white block. And my sisters and I used to love that block. We'd get down there and we'd lick that block and lick it and lick it. It was years later I figured out what that block was for. It's for the cows. They're the ones that licked it because, see, cows have very high levels of sodium. As a matter of fact, they have 1,500 milligrams of sodium per deciliter in their milk. Now, the purpose of the cow's milk is to feed the baby cow. And so apparently the baby cow needs a high level of sodium. Now let's look at the human milk. Human breast milk is about 350 milligrams per deciliter. That's about a fourth, which tells me that cow's milk is going to be very high in sodium, and it was not intended for human consumption. You can do the same thing with protein comparisons. You know, many things that are found in cow's milk are so off the charts with human milk. And yet humans quit drinking human milk at a certain age, and then they're weaned from mom, then they go to the cow. Just never understood that. Another big problem is all these pickled foods. I used to do a lecture every year at Samyuk University in Seoul, Korea. And one day the professor who would bring me there was taking me back to the airport, and I saw a sign that said cancer hospital. And I asked him, what are the major cancers here in Korea? He says, oh, esophageal and stomach cancer. And I says, well, what do you relate that to? He says, well, our high sodium intake. Well, sodium can, because you realize that high sodium intakes, Helicobacter pylori, or H. pylori, likes to live in a high sodium medium. And H. pylori is a bacteria that we get into our gut that causes ulcers and cancer. But I says, no, I don't think it's that, because there's three countries that share something in common: Korea, India, and Mexico. Does anyone know what they share in common? Spicy food. In Korea, what's their favorite food? And I love it too. Yes, kimchi's good. How about in India? What's their favorite food? Yes, and it is hot stuff. And in Mexico, got jalapenos or anything with peppers, those hot tamales, it is hot food. They lead the world, those three countries, in stomach cancer and esophageal cancer. Now, that said, I like hot food. I like Kentucky Fried Chicken. I like strawberry ice cream. I like pizza. I haven't eaten for 30 years or more.
How about kimchi?
Kimchi? When I go to Korea, they have a place on the counter that's washed kimchi. Because basically, you go into a cafeteria at Samyuk University, three meals a day, it's going to be hot. So I go to the washed kimchi, not quite as hot. Sometimes I get the real stuff because I really like it. You understand? Chili peppers. Yeah. Tobacco increases your risk of lung cancer by 10 times. How about chili peppers? Increases your risk of stomach cancer by 17 times. Let's go back, go back, go back, go back, go back. Quit that. Yeah, 17 times. Now, it may taste good. I like what my favorite preacher, you know who my favorite preacher is? There's things that are true, but they're not truth. C.D. Brooks, my favorite preacher. But that's what he says. There's things that are true, but they're not truth. Have you heard that there's good phytochemicals in chocolate? Have you heard that vinegar's good for you? Have you heard that hot peppers are good? Fermented foods are good? Yes, that's true. It's also true that if I was driving a long way, I'm getting tired, if I smoked a cigarette, it'd keep me awake. Does that make cigarettes good for me? No, it's true, but it's not truth. Folks, God has given us a better standard. Why in the world do we go to the gods of Ekron to find out how we're supposed to eat when God has already told us through his prophet the best way to eat, the best way to live? I just don't understand it. Well, I know why we do it, because we like it. I like it. And so look, this study right here says chocolate's good for me, especially dark chocolate. You know in Europe how they make the chocolate really dark and really smooth and flavorful? They add blood to it. They have kosher chocolate in Europe. Kosher means they didn't use pig blood in that batch. A friend of mine who's a doctor in Vienna, he told me about this. Very interesting. Matter of fact, I was told this story down at Pune. He had learned this thing about other things, that there's insect fragments and rodent hairs in any chocolate. It's just allowed by government. So he was on an elevator in the hospital in Vienna, and one of his colleagues was eating a chocolate bar, and he says, do you know what's in your chocolate bar? No, what? There's rodent hairs and insect fragments. No, no, no. Let's get off on the next floor. Beep. They get off on the pathology floor. So he takes a little piece of his friend's chocolate, and he smears it on a slide and hands it to a pathologist. Now, the pathologist looks at it. What do they think he's looking for? What do you think he's looking at? Brown. He's looking at a brown smear on a slide. What does he think he's looking at? Poop. feces. So he puts this piece of feces underneath the microscope, and he's looking, and he says, yep, got colon cancer. Colon cancer? They're both my friend and this other doctor. What do you mean colon cancer? He says, full of red blood cells. Bon appetit. Chlorine. Cancer loves chlorine. High levels of chlorine. They use chlorine to purify water. And they find that people who drink purified water, outside of purified water, outside of areas that use chlorinated water, have a 93% less rate of cancer. That's pretty astounding, just from getting rid of chlorinated water. There's 93%. They've done some interesting studies with chickens. They raised some chickens. One group was given water with chlorine, one water with no chlorine. From the time that they're, little coming out of the egg to the bigger, the ones who were drinking the chlorinated water, 100% of them had damage to their arteries. Of the ones who were not drinking chlorinated water, none of them had damage to their arteries. What's this foundational law of health? Perfect health requires perfect circulation, and the life is in the blood. And so this not only, of course, Johns Hopkins is saying chlorine feeds cancer. It's also going to be causing you some heart disease too. Another problem, another study they did with chickens, two groups of chickens, one drinking the chlorine water, no chlorine water. The ones who were drinking no chlorine water, they grew faster and healthier than the ones that were drinking the water with chlorine in them. Speaking of chickens, I was giving a lecture in the International Church in Tokyo a few years ago. And, when I was a child, we would get 100 fertilized eggs every spring, put them in an incubator, hatch them out, and about 3 or 4 months later, when they were called fry in size, what a great thing to grow up to be. I'm going to grow up to be a fryer size. Anyway, I'd kill them, my sisters would clean them, and we'd have chicken all year. It would take about 3 or 4 months to get them up to fryer size. Well, I've learned since then that factory farms can't wait that long. They can get it done in about 6 weeks. So I told that to this group, and after the lecture, a lot of South Americans there, this one guy came up to me and he says, my friend back in South America, he's got a father who raises chickens. It doesn't take him 6 weeks. He can go from the egg to fryer in 18 days. Oh. Now, you might have heard a situation a number of years ago. They had a big explosion of precocious puberty in Puerto Rico. Anyone hear about that? The link, they sent a bunch of epidemiologists from the CDC down there to find out what's the problem. They finally found the link. All the parents worked at the chicken factory, and they could bring home chickens. They ate a lot of chicken. Well, whatever you put into that chicken, it's going to go into the human. And so they were taking these young children with developing bodies and accelerating their growth to the point where you had 7-year-old boys with fully developed breasts. You had all of them with secondary sexual characteristics. And today, there's growth hormones, there's antibiotics, there's all kinds of things putting into our animals just to keep them healthy enough to live long enough, to feed us well enough, and also to grow faster. That's what it's all about. It's all about the bottom dollar. Now, acid, that's another thing that feeds cancer. And you get a high protein intake, animal protein intake, cancer thrives in an acid environment. Matter of fact, the body takes it takes hydrochloric acid to break it down, but as it's breaking down, it produces sulfuric acid. And that's H2SO4, which is a bad news, going to be causing a real acid problem. What does the body do when the acid level goes up in the bloodstream? How is it going to neutralize it? It's going to add calcium to it. So if you're eating a high protein diet, we're talking about animal protein now, it's going to cause you to lose your bone calcium. Plus the fact that there's no fiber in it, so as it passes through your body, taking between 3 and 7 days, it's going to be giving off all of its toxins that are in the thing in the first place. What should your pH be in your body? All right, 7.365 is just about right. 365 days a year, so 7.365 is the optimum amount. Now let's look at the range. Goes from 1 to 14. Battery acid, pH 0. Don't drink it. Gastric juices, it's pretty hot down there. That's why basically our body can take care of most problems you put into it. So point one, vinegar. Have you heard that it's good to take vinegar? What does the Spirit of Prophecy say? Never, never, never. But yet we listen to the gods of Ekron and the science of Babylon and we still take our vinegar. Vinegar, pH of 2. Beer, pH of 3. Wonder why there's so much people with cancer taking alcohol? Beer, wine, take a little wine for your stomach's sake. He was not talking about this type of wine. pH of 4. Rain, 5, probably here about 4. Where my friends live on the other side of the island, probably 3. You've got pretty acid rain here. Milk, pH of 6. Remember, milk causes osteoporosis. Frank Oski, Julie Cotter, all kinds of places. Pure water, pH of 7, good for it. Seawater, pH of 8. Ionized water, which is good water to drink, a pH of 9. It will help alkalize your body. Now, I'm not into getting a bunch of spending a lot of money on alkalized water. I try to filter mine with my charcoal and drink as carefully as I can. Detergent, 10. This is not all that interesting. Ammonia, 11. Bleach, 12. Lye is 13. Distilled water is pretty much neutral. Well, basically, it's acid, but it's carbolic acid, and according to Dr. Thrash, just hit the bottle, it breaks the carbolic loose, and you're okay to drink it. We have put, having a brain burp right now. We have put, what's the kind of water again? Distillers at UT Pines, all of our patients drink nothing but distilled water.
Because no, you don't lose your minerals?
No. No, you're not going to lose your minerals. No. Let's see how it basically works. Let's sort of do a compare. I just put this together some time ago to try to get us to understand what it's doing. Comparing our body with a fish tank, how this whole acid thing works. The water is our blood and... Our blood is about 75% water, right? We've already looked at that before. Look at the fish in a fish tank as our blood cells. When a fish tank, the filter stops in the fish tank, it starts to become cloudy, and what's going to happen to the fish? Your carbon oxygen is going to sort of be destroyed, and the fish are going to die. So what do you do when your fish start to die? What should you do for them? Give them a shot of something? Yeah. Maybe give them some medications? That's what we do. That's what we do to yourself. You start getting a symptom that says you got a problem, and rather than correcting the problem, moving from cause to effect, you go out and you take some supplemental thing. That's not God's way. I'm almost forgetting how I put this little thing together. It's sort of fun to do anyway. So we clean the water up. We're going to clean our blood up. Same thing with our bodies. Our bodies, come on now. There we go. Got the oxygen in there. If we start to get acid, we lose our polarity. We start to lose our oxygen on our blood. Remember the same polarity thing we talked about with cell phones. Same thing with acid. It changes polarity, and therefore we build up with carbon dioxide. The best thing to do then is to alkalize your blood, get it back to where it should be. All right, a little bit of review from last week. The foundational law of health, what was it? Foundation. Reason from cause to effect. Then we've got the two laws on top of that. The first one being the life is in the blood. The second one being perfect health requires a perfect circulation. Okay, blood. Polarity. Red blood cells have a polarity. They basically repel each other. As they come together, it's just like two magnets. You put them together on the positive side, you can't let them stick together. But if you destroy the polarity of your red blood cells by a high acid intake, you're going to, your blood becomes acidic. Come on now, go by. Then your blood cells are going to stick together. And when your blood cells stick together, you've got the thing we already talked about before. Okay. I'm going on a little bit fast here. I'm then getting into some repetitive stuff. Maybe it's time for questions and answers. Let's take some questions and answers, because I'm running out of voice. Any questions? I know I had a lot of questions in the break, but any general questions now?
Can you elaborate more on the alkaline water? Because it's been quite a bad here in Hawaii lately. A lot of people have asked.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's quite a fad. We had a manager of our country life before Dennis Miller came back, and he would go up to north of Atlanta to bring back these huge jugs of alkalized water and was selling it like popcorn. But as soon as he'd gone, we got rid of that stuff. To me, it's just a fad. Here's what I think about it. If it's something that you can't do yourself, it's not something that God requires of you. You can grow your own food. You can get your own nutrients from the food, even though, and that's why I started off the program this morning with that part there in Hebrews 11, verses 39 and 40. But these all, having received a good report, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. What do I get from that? We live in the year 2012. We live a long way. We live 6,000 years from creation. But I believe that God, in his infinite wisdom, knowing the end from the beginning, could see 2012 when he created this world. And even then, he had enough in the food, in the ground, in this biosphere, to give us all the nutrients we need from our food today. Now, granted, our food is not like it used to be. But I believe that we're doing the very best that we can. And God knows what we can do. And these papaya trees, now I understand that they're already genetically modifying papayas around this place. That is terrible.
All of the stuff in GMO, in fact, I think all of the big items that's grown commercially is all GMO.
It's time to start growing our own.
I saw rural people cutting them down.
Yeah, there was 12 acres. There was 12 acres cut down near where my friend Ryan lives, Ryan Marina. Yeah. It's terrible things, but that said, God will help us help ourselves. We need to do what we can. It's time to get out of the cities. Most of you already are. I mean, there is no cities on this town, in this island. But we need to start growing our food out there. We need to start taking care of ourselves. And even if it is genetically modified, if we're doing the best we can, God will protect us, I believe. But I do believe genetic modification and radioactive isotopes and microwaving and everything else out there is going to cause, if Jesus did not come soon, we would have such an explosion of diseases in the next 50 years that our healthcare system, which is going to be bankrupt anyway, would not be able to do anything for it. Nothing. We're living in a very, very strange time. An exciting time, too. We get to be amongst 144,000 if we allow God to do that work in us. Questions? Yes.
Yeah, just recently started to make my own sauerkraut out of just regular cabbage, and I heard that it has a high probiotic content to it. So if you're saying that it's not the best thing to do, that it's probably not doing it for me.
It's fermented. There's things that are true, but they're not true. Now, I love sauerkraut, just like I love kimchi. But there are certain things I've got to draw the line on. The reason why people did those things was food preservation. Before refrigeration, you had to do that. You had to find some way to be able to keep food through the winter. Now we got refrigeration, we really don't need it quite as much, but one of these days our refrigerator is going to be gone too. You just start learning to eat, grow it. I mean, here in Hawaii, no problem. You just go out and grow it all year round. Back in the States, you're going to have a problem. Up in Michigan, can't eat snowflakes. You just eat the food the way God made it and trust that all that you're going to need is going to be in that food. That's all I can say. Now, if you know you're low, let's say you're low in acidophilus, you've been taking antibiotics, you need to replace your flora, there is vegetable acidophilus. You know, there's some yogurts made with vegetable acidophilus. And what you can do, I've got a friend from Australia that works with us in Japan. She makes yogurt all the time. She'll get one thing of vegetarian, vegan yogurt and put a spoonful in the culture. She'll use the milk and whatever else, the soy milk. And we have yogurt all the time. Therefore, you're restoring that natural flora that you need to have in your intestinal tract. And we do really good with that stuff. So don't get carried away with all these names, probiotics, macrobiotics, melaleuca, whatever they're going to throw at you. God is going to let you get everything you need from the simple foods if we just learn how to go out and get them. It's amazing. There are foods out there that hopefully they're not going to genetically modify. You ever heard of a guy named Calvin Dense? Mm-hmm. He used to be on this island years ago. Huh? Okay, he was here in this church. He liked that thing called Tutu Pie. Anyway, I was on a nature walk with him in Georgia a few years ago. He says, every day, go out and find something green and eat it within a half hour of picking it. Because there's elements that as soon as you pick the fruit or vegetable or leaf, it starts to degrade within a half hour, it's gone. So I got into the habit, I'd go out in the morning or in the afternoon, and I'd pick some sour grass, and I'd get some salt vine, and I'd get some pine needles, and I'd just go out and get some different greens in my yard, put them in a blender with some water, blend up and drink it. It wasn't the best tasting stuff in the world. But sometimes it's just those trace nutrients you're going to get from something that's truly fresh. As soon as you pick whatever it is, it starts to degrade. As soon as you fracture your seed or your grain, it's going to start to oxidize. We should do things as fresh as possible. Best we can.
Talking about Babylon, you mean Babylon giving us pills, and in the Bible, it talks about Babylon being the false church, and we was having a discussion last night, and we wanted to make the distinction with what you're saying about Babylon.
Okay. Now, this is my own thoughts, my own thinking, and I know I'm not politically correct in calling Babylon's pills, but I believe that Babylon is a number of different things. It's not just a false church. I think even more so, Babylon is a way of thinking. And I used the illustration, I thought I used it here last week, when I was teaching there in Romania. The director, a good friend of mine, Daniel Senyuk, he asked me, are you going to give him a test when you get done with your class? I said, you know, Daniel, I don't like to give tests. He says, but if you don't tell them you're going to give them a test, they're not going to listen. They won't take notes. It'll just be right over their heads. So the first day in the class, I stood up in front of the class and I said, I don't like tests. Oh, neither do we. Yeah, good. We don't like tests. I think they're Babylonian. Yeah, we think they're Babylonian too. Whoa, we're not going to have any tests. But because you all have Babylonian minds, we're going to have a test at the end of this class because we have Babylonian minds. What does it mean to have it says, come out of her, my people. Now, granted, that can mean two things. The people who are in the apostate churches, the people who are in the churches and all these different things, they're going to come out. But I tell you what, many people in our church have Babylonian minds, and they need to come out of that too. How do they get there? Well, many ways. One way, and I'm thankful you got a pastor who went to Weimar, where do most of our pastors get their advanced degrees? Where did their professors get their advanced degrees? Babylon. And many of our people who get their advanced degrees got their advanced degrees from Fuller Theological Seminary, and Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and Dallas Theological Seminary. This is Babylon. And yet we go there. A good friend of mine, he was the ministerial secretary of the Kentucky-Tennessee Conference. They wanted him to get an advanced degree, wanted him to get a doctorate. It looks good to have doctor behind your name. It makes you really look good and all this stuff. And so he went to the Baptist Theological Seminary to get his doctorate. He dropped out. He told us, he was at UT Finance, he says, I almost lost my religion. And yet we send our people to Babylon. And then they come and start to teach us and preach to us with the Babylonian foolishness. We need to, and again, our medicine, the pill thing. God says, don't be conformed to the world. The world is Babylon. Be transformed in your mind. That means do it my way. Take the leaves of the tree of life, which are found in tree, shrub, and flower. But we've got Babylonian minds. You've got a sickness, I need a tablet. People say, I've got this problem. What simple thing, what easy thing can I do to get rid of my problem? That's Babylonian thinking. Our educational system is totally Babylonian. We teach to the test. You got to get your book, you got to study your book, you got to pass the test, you get a piece of paper for your wall, you forget everything you learned, and you go on with your life. We are Babylonians. I'm a Babylonian. It takes a long time to get out of Babylon. But God, our sports system came out of Greece. Greece is part of Babylon. Babylon is a composite animal. Remember that the animal coming up out of the ocean? It was a composite animal. That's Babylon. We are all immured. We are all stuck in the slough of Babylon. So we need to come out of it. So my discussion on that one is, yes, there's going to be people in those churches that are going to come out of those churches, but there's people in here that have to come out of that way of thinking. And when finally we do that, God does not now bring many people in through that door because of the unconverted and backslidden condition of the people sitting in the pews right now. When we finally get our act together, you're going to have to sit there and knock out a wall to afford people the place to sit. Because let me tell you, people out there are hungry for truth because they're not finding it anywhere else. That's right, they are. Matter of fact, we're told that company after company will be leaving the church and troop after troop will be coming into the church. Let's just don't be in that company that's leaving. Many people. The shaking's coming, folks. The first shaking that we had as a church was founded on October the 23rd, 1844, the day after the Great Disappointment. Was there a great shaking then?
Yeah.
We went down to a very few people. But I tell you what, then it was a pure church. Then they could get down on their knees and God started showing them life. Yes?
What are you?
Go ahead, pass it down. I won't even listen to them until you pass it to them. Okay.
With all the information that you shared over last weekend today, how would you counsel someone who is not living this type of lifestyle to start living this type of lifestyle? For some people, it's very drastic.
It is.
And it's a hard switch over.
Yeah.
So how would you counsel those types of people?
God does not take something away that he does not give something better. So you take sort of a stair-step approach to that. That said, it's not an evolutionary process. It's something that should take place pretty quickly. Now, there are certain things you need to stop right now. Satan laughs at those people who try to wean themselves from tobacco. He laughs at that spirit of prophecy. Just laughs at those people. Tobacco, alcohol, you stop the stuff. Caffeine, you just stop the stuff. Now, we have a solution for the caffeine thing, because many people, they can go through some real jives when they're getting off the caffeine. Take a cup of coffee, put it in the refrigerator. When you start going through that thing, kicking the dog, you take one spoonful of the cold coffee. Just enough caffeine to get you over to the thing. Before that coffee cup is empty, you're over the caffeine addiction. Now it is the every other part of the addiction. It's just something that is your comfort food. People do comfort things, and we need to do that. What you do is, if they're onto everything in the world, you get onto just the clean things. Once they're on the clean things, get away from the red things. Once they're off the red things, get into the analogs. Now, you know why they call them analogs? I don't know why they call them analogs. When I eat them, they lay like logs on my stomach. Okay? They do. I eat a Vegalink. A Vegalink is a link. Well, that thing stays there forever. But after that, then you take them, then you might do the gluten thing, or you do some things that you put in together, until finally they've gotten to the point where things taste pretty good. Your taste buds renew. Within less than a month, your taste buds are all new again. So I would say within a month or two, you should be able to transition from going hog-a-y with everything in the world, omnivore, to being a pretty good vegetarian. But trouble is, we plateau. Another problem, we come into the church, we find out that they're not as far advanced as we became when we started learning this health message. We need to make sure that we ourselves in the church, especially in our potlucks, are going to the very top. And there are potlucks I've been to that you got to watch, because I'm pretty naive. If it's at an Adventist potluck, I can eat it. But they'll say, don't eat that. That's dead chicken. Don't eat that. That's fish over there. There's some, believe it or not, taking pork to Adventist potlucks. That's pretty hard to swallow in more ways than one.
You mean in that case, in that sense, Adventists should know this by now. You mean we're living in the 21st century, and it's been said that not everybody is where I'm at, because just what 8-9 months ago I used to eat meat, and now I don't even eat any meat.
And you look great too. You show me. No, but that's not. You mean
praise God?
But pork pie.
There are people in our church for 20 years know this message, and I've been told that not everybody's where they should be, where I'm at.
What's the difference? That's not politically correct. Okay. I'm going to do it anyway. What's the definition of sin? That's from God's standpoint. Don't go on. That's from God's standpoint. What is the definition of sin from our standpoint? He that knoweth to do right and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Now, is it a sin to abuse our bodies? Is it a sin to commit suicide?
Yeah.
Is doing things to our bodies like smoking, drinking, and eating a diet that's going to lessen our lifespan, is that some form of suicide? Yeah. Albeit very slow. Yeah. Has anyone ever seen the November 2005 edition of National Geographic? It's on longevity.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Three groups of people. A small group of people in Sardinia, Okinawans, and Seventh-day Adventists. Mm-hmm. Very fascinating study. What I like about it was that little, they put the three circles together. Here's what they do, here's what they do, and here's what they do. I like that little part in the heart. You know what one of the big things in the heart was? In Japanese, they call it ikigai. We call it fellowship. It's, and the Sardinians, close family relationship. It's amazing what science is showing us right now, how much benefit there is to having a church family. When you don't, people who are solitary like I am don't live as long. Even if you got there is that verse that says a contentious wife is like a constant dripping on a rainy day. But that said, I do get I am around the world a lot. I've got many, many friends all around the world. But when I'm home, I spend a lot of, and this past week hanging loose, I was hanging loose by myself except for a Thursday down there with Lloyd. But I enjoyed my solitary time. Probably too much, but I've been doing it for so long now, I'm stuck with it. Any other questions? Hope that explained the Babylon thing. I'm not saying the church is Babylon. I'm saying the people in the church have Babylonian minds. Yeah.
Okay, now, are you advocating veganism?
Is that thing turned on?
Are you doing anything like that?
Veganism, yes.
Are you talking about raw veganism? Or?
Well, let's define terms. Vegan. No, I don't think it's on. He's asking the question, am I into veganism and all this stuff?
Yeah.
Vegan is you've got a vegetarian, which is a very, very large term. You got a lacto-ovo-vegetarian. Okay, that means eggs and chicken. You got lacto-ovo-fish-o-chico, or they got other better words I use, fish-o-chico. You got lacto-ovo-fish-o-chico ice cream vegetarian.
Oh, fake fish.
But then you got the vegan. Now, the vegan means, I was at Bucknell University one year, Dr. Thrash, and we were doing a seminar. It was a vegetarian congress from America. And let me tell you, there are some real butch people in that group. These people are radicals. Now, there's many reasons to be a vegetarian, but I've got a booth, and across me was the feminist for animal rights. There's this big, big hulking lady walks over to me, and she says, she looked down at my belt, and she says, real vegans don't wear leather. It was a roadkill. I didn't kill it, believe it. But a real vegan won't eat honey. They will not wear leather. I don't know if they wear wool or not, but so I call myself a total vegetarian. Yes, I am a total vegetarian because there's not one thing in the animal kingdom that my body needs. There's not one thing in the animal kingdom that's safe to do anymore. Now, you talked about the juice diet. Juice diet to me is a therapeutic diet. And I would do therapeutic things periodically, therapeutically. But to be on a therapeutic diet constantly is going to give you major problems.
What about coupling vegetarianism? When I say vegetarianism, I mean a plant-based diet, you know, like the China study,
right.
A plant-based diet. So you're eating, you know, the the blossoms, the stems, the seeds, and mm-hmm. the whole part of the plant, and you're juicing, whether carrot juice or whatever type of vegetable juice or a dark green juice, every day. So you're, you know, you're juicing and you're eating a vegetarian diet. It doesn't need to be all raw. It can be maybe 10% raw, but mostly, you know, vegetarian. There's no animal products at all.
Right.
But as far as leather and stuff, I'm not, you know, talking about that.
Right, I understand.
So would you advocate that, or is that a problem if you're juicing every day?
Well, when you juice, unless you're using a Vitamix, you're getting rid of all your fiber.
What about a Green Star juicer? Yeah, there's no fiber in that either. Yeah.
No, that's the one we use, my group sells in Japan. And right, there's no fiber. You really take some of the okra that's left over. Do you call it okra? I know you do that when you make soy milk. I would take some of the stuff that you are leaving out.
Like the carrot pulp.
And somehow, well, we make coconut carrot macaroons with it.
Okay.
Quite nice, too.
I see what you're saying.
But to be, first of all, if you're drink juicing every day, that's a meal.
Mm-hmm.
If you're eating it with your meal, you're drinking with your meal.
Mm-hmm.
What we do with our cancer patients, because we give them green drinks and carrot drinks every day, they will get the drink about 15 minutes before the meal begins. And then by that time, the water's been assimilated, then they can eat their meals without diluting their gastric juices.
Right, that's what I meant.
Yeah. That's fine, but still, and I know that that's what you're doing, and I'm not going to say don't do that. I've got a friend that does it all the time. He does carrot juices all the time, and he's got Heliobacter pyloric. He's trying to find some way to fight the Heliobacter pyloric.
Yeah, I know if I don't juice, I get all those symptoms of pylori, all of the pains and stuff.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
See, then you are doing it therapeutically.
Right.
And if you're doing it therapeutically and it's working for you, keep doing it therapeutically.
Yeah. It doesn't take my appetite away from going regular vegetarian. I still can eat the salads. I can still eat the same volume of food that I eat even, you know, prior to juicing. So I don't think it's really...
But I would also do some more research on what else can you do to fight the H. pylori.
Yeah.
Grapeseed seed extract. GSC. My friend, every morning he has his 4 quarts of lemon water, which is very good for the liver in the morning.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Stress really sets him off with his H. pylori. If he gets stressed, he's on his back.
Mm.
He needs to rest a lot during those times. It's a bad actor. It's really a bad actor out there.
And how do you break the cravings from, we talk about those toxins, coffees and all of that. How do you break that? I mean, I can drink it and stop for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and then something will set me off. I might have to take her to the hospital, and it's late at night, 2 a.m, and I need to drive home. I drink one cup of coffee, and that starts it.
Yeah.
And I go back on. It's so strong. It's like worse than any drug that I've ever experienced.
Yeah. Well, caffeine or anything in his family is extremely addictive. That's why people are chocoholics. They are indeed chocoholics. What do? It just
willpower.
Just gotta say no.
Yeah, willpower.
As,
I guess.
As simple as that says, you know, the everything depends upon the right action of the will, and the will is right here in the frontal lobe of the brain. Caffeine diminishes the frontal lobe of the brain. Sugar diminishes it. Meat diminishes it. Any drug in the world that you take diminishes it. Watching television, listening to rock music, all these things diminish the frontal lobe of the brain. We need to sit there and strengthen this thing because this is where God writes his character.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? Oh, comment. That makes it easy.
Regarding overcoming addictions, especially to foods or whatever, for the caffeine, there's a really good book out called Caffeine Blues. Okay, so utilizing that. But I would like to offer my definition of willpower. It's when I turn my will over to his power.
Mm.
It's always back to God.
While I've got it in my hand, let me remind you, I've got both of my programs from last week and this week, even the stuff that I added after lunch is on here now. I'm giving this to the Sister Washington. But it's whatever you, if you want it, It's about between 260 and 280 megabytes. My programs are not short. But it's in PDF format. It looks really sharp and crisp on the slide, so you might enjoy it. If you listen to the CD along with watching the slides, you might get a little bit in depth about what it was all about. Plus, you understand what sometimes I just got a picture, you have no idea what it means. If you listen to the story, you know what the story means. Okay, any other questions? Yeah. Right there, behind you. Move this way.
Would you mind sharing your thoughts on people who follow, say, a raw foods diet, and people think that it's the best way to go, and so I'm just curious what your thoughts are. And I guess especially, one of the things that triggered that question was you'd made a comment about Hallelujah Acres, which strongly encourages raw foods as part of their protocol.
Yeah. I believe that a raw food diet, like I was talking about up here, is a therapeutic diet. But even therapeutically, there are nutrients that we're not going to get from raw food that we could get if it was released with some heat added to the food. So, matter of fact, you take something like broccoli. Cooked broccoli, lightly steamed broccoli, is far more of an anti-cancer than raw broccoli is, because it releases nutrients better than the cooked. So even having a little bit of cooked food, I consider, we are feeding our patients at UT Pines a large amount of raw food now, big cancer patients. But 80% would be a good number. I think we should eat more raw food, but you can't eat grains unless you sprout them. So you gotta get rid of all your grains unless you're sprouting them. You gotta get rid of, take something like oatmeal. Do people eat it raw?
Mm-hmm.
They call it muesli. Mm-hmm. What does Ellen White say about grains used for porridge or mush? Page 301 of Ministry of Healing. Grains used for porridge or mush should have several hours cooking. So Dr. Thrash did an experiment. She took a number of different grains. She cooked them for 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, and took a sample each time with these different grains to see how long it takes the starches to hydrolyze. You see, a glucose is what you want. A starch is nothing but a long chain of glucoses. And when you go through, has anyone ever eaten an ear of corn raw? Is it good? Sweet?
Yes.
Right. Have you ever eaten one after it's already dried?
No.
No, you can't. You break all your teeth out. Because basically, it's dried, and it loses a hydrogen and an oxygen, and now they're stuck together into a large starch chain. If you eat that large starch chain, that means by not cooking your grains long enough, you're going to get a large starch chain in your gut. In Medical Hypothesis, I think it was about 1991, they had an article. It says that everyone over the age of 30 has a brain filled with tiny lacunar scars. And they calculate that to be caused by not cooking the grains long enough. Because when that starch gets, and then what they did, they took a woman who was lactating, gave her a water with some starch solution, she drank it. Within a half hour, they found starch in her breast milk, in her blood, in her urine, and other body fluids. That is a major problem, because a starch chain is a huge thing compared to a red blood cell, again, that has to bend over to get through a capillary. So Sister White says you got to cook them. Matter of fact, she told us how to make bread. How should our bread be? Small, well-baked loaves. That means it goes through the hydrolysis. It goes through what's called the Maillard reaction, right through this. So when you eat it, you're not going to be getting large starch chains, and it's sweeter. If you've ever gone through a grain field like wheat or rye or barley, and you pick one of the heads, and when it's still in the milk stage and eat it, very sweet. That's the milk stage. When Jesus and his disciples were passing through the grain field that Sabbath morning, they were plucking probably heads of barley. They were milling them. That was what the Pharisees didn't like. They were going through a milling process, blowing away the chaff and eating the little grains. They were having a pretty tasty breakfast, better than Fruit Loops. But it was because it was in its milk stage. So don't look at that and say, well, they were eating raw. No, they were eating it in milk stage. Once But if you soak it for a long time and somehow you break those things, it usually takes heat, though, to break the starches into glucoses, then you can eat it, and it's perfectly fine. So going back to the raw food thing, I believe, one, is faddish. I believe, two, that it can deplete you because you're not going to get the nutrients that you really need eating some little bit of cooked food in there with it. Basically believe it's a little bit of an unbalanced diet for a long period of time. Now, granted, people have been on it for years and years and years and say it's great. I know people who smoke cigarettes and drink brandy for years and years and years and turn to 100 and say, what's your success? I saw a picture the other day of a woman turning 100. She was lighting her cigarette on the candle from her 100th birthday. So should we start smoking cigarettes to increase our longevity? Just because someone survives does not mean it works for everybody. I think we need to get down to what is the very best way. Sister White calls a loaf of bread the staff of life. So anyway, in Eden, it was all raw. In heaven, it'll be all raw again. I don't know if we're going to be making bread up there, but right now we're in an interim. Remember, when we sinned, God added something to our diet. Got to eat your vegetables now. Because things changed inside of us, and things were going to change even more. We got certain genes were going to start expressing themselves that were going to change the way our bodies were made up. And God knew this thing, so he added things to our diet. He even let us eat meat at one time. But that's completely gone now, too. I hope that answered your question, but I do think it's an unbalanced thing. We had a couple from UT Pines went and they ran one of his Hallelujah Acres up in Kentucky for some time. And now they're back running UT Pines. And they saw that it wasn't doing all that it could do. God wants us to be balanced people, and he wants us to have good nutrients. We're going to have to do that by breaking them loose sometimes with heat. That's why it's good to toast your bread. They're never going to pass this up there.
I just wanted to say that instead of calling ourselves vegan, we should call ourselves health reformers. That opens up a kind of dialogue, and then we can say, this is what a health reformer, and we can open up the Bible and say, this is what God's diet is for us.
Yeah. The trouble is, if you say I'm a health reformer, they say, what do you do? Because when I was younger, you went to reform school. So I'm a health reformer. What do you do bad? So I call myself a total vegetarian. That's what works for me. But I'm also a health reformer because it goes beyond diet, a whole long way beyond diet. We need to be physically. What was the last act? We find it in Leviticus chapter 16. What was the last act they did on the Day of Atonement? Last thing they did. The priest had gone into the most holy place with the blood of the Lord's goat. He sprinkled it upon the horns of the altar, on the mercy seat, on the propitiation. He came back out, and he came back out, and he laid his hand upon the scapegoat's head, and he confessed all of his sins of 364 days, or it's 299, because they had a 300-day year, confessed all the sins on his head, and then what happened? Who? Who took him out? Who took the goat out?
Fit man.
It says the hand of a fit man. I believe it means exactly that, a fit man. Some translations say appropriate man. Some day, other things. But I think it means someone who is mentally, physically, and spiritually fit. Because they weren't going to just take it outside the camp and give it a good kick in the bottom. They had to take it so far out, that goat was not going to make it back again. God is waiting for a generation of fit men and women and boys and girls. That's what he's waiting for right now. Because we are living in the antitypical Day of Atonement. And God is waiting for us to get fit, to lead sin out of his camp. I believe that we can live without sin.
Amen.
If we can't, God made a mistake.